We have so very many things still left to do today, all of them incredibly important and meaningful. And the topic for today is mercy. And we are also in stewardship season, so I want you to be in a good mood, so the sermon is shorter today. Not much, so don't get too excited, but a little bit. At first, I was actually thinking about extending it, since we have 60 extra minutes this morning, but then so very many of us have already had a healthy dose of worship this week. That is to say, it was so good to see so many of you at the service of solidarity at Temple Har Zion this past Friday night. What a joy as a pastor to look out at a different worship space and see so many of my church family show up in such numbers to love on other people in this time that is filled with hostility and hate. So, a short sermon is your reward. And it is about mercy. To choose mercy, among other things, is to say, you are a child of God, and so I will treat you that way. It is to make ourselves vulnerable and value others above all else. It is to risk being kind, being forgiving and supportive and caring, rather than giving in to other options before anger, rather than giving in to our anxieties and our propensity for defensiveness or greed, above any of our fears. To choose mercy is to choose people. And that is what today's story is about. For the past 2 months, we've been journeying through the Hebrew Bible, and previously in the Hebrew Bible. What can be seen is that it's all about people. It's all about God as well, 100%. But God, it turns out, is 100% about people. Since the very beginning, God creates us out of love. There's no other reason. God's heart breaks when we hurt one another. We see that in stories like Noah and the Ark, Joseph and his brothers and the Exodus. And God's great hope is to see humanity's humanity resurrected. We receive that in God's covenant with Abraham and Sarah. And throughout the ages, our great human task is to reclaim God's original purpose for us, to see other people the way God sees them. Choose them. We have some stories of when we've gotten that right, and we have a whole lot more stories about when we've gotten that very, very wrong. We left off last week with King Solomon, son of King David. Solomon was a ruler who had the opportunity to do more good and bestow more blessing upon other people than perhaps anyone who ever came before him. He was incredibly powerful and influential. He was well acquainted with God's precepts. By legend, he was divinely wise. But Solomon chooses to use his power and acumen to benefit himself. For the sake of acquiring as much wealth as possible, it seems, he becomes an ancient arms dealer, selling chariots, the fighter jets of his time, to neighboring countries. He personally becomes exorbitantly rich with just gold, gold, gold all over his palace, all the while nosediving his people into a terrible debt crisis. And to get out of it, some of the things he does include selling off some of his villages to other kings. He literally sells out his own people. And then he taxes the rest of his subjects so severely that after his death, when his heir won't roll back Solomon's oppressive policies, there's a rebellion, like you do. And similar to how in the Hunger Games series, that there's a war between the wealthy capital versus everyone else, almost every other tribe of Israel breaks off from the power center in Judah. And in just half a dozen or so generations, since Moses led the Israelites out of bondage in Egypt, that core group of people meant to usher God's love for humankind back into the world is at such odds with itself that it splits in two. So several generations after the fracturing of that monarchy, the new northern kingdom hasn't been faring much better than before. It's had its own separate line of kings that turn out to be just as greedy and selfish and violent as the old ones. There's this general lack in the land of neighborliness, generosity, and compassion. So the Lord raises up prophets to restore Israel back to shalom, back to seeing each other and their neighbors as the children of God that they are. Elisha is one of those prophets. And his MO in this time of hostility and hate is to show mercy. Elisha is the kind of guy who feeds hungry people, hundreds of them. He takes care of strangers, and he heals the sick, even Israel's enemies. So Naaman, from today's passage, isn't just someone on the other side of an argument. Naaman is this arrogant top general from the enemy Aramaeans who have been beating up on Israel for some time now. So he is the orchestrator of violence and pain against Elisha's people. And he also has leprosy. It appears not to be an especially bad case of leprosy yet, but things almost surely will develop for the worse. That's certainly the understanding in the ancient world here. So Naaman needs some serious help. And he seems desperate and willing to try anything, ask anyone, and willing to pay any price. And despite being a powerful enemy of Israel, despite it probably being advantageous to just let things take their course and let Naaman grow sicker and then incapacitated, maybe die, despite the fact that he's in a position that's easy to exploit, Elisha heals him for free, making this story a potentially awkward one to bring up during a church pledge drive. But it actually fits pretty perfectly. Because what this story is really about is mercy. It's about seeing other people as the children of God that they are and treating them that way despite conflict, despite convention and labels, despite logic and reason. Naaman is a quintessential enemy of the prophet and his people, but what Elisha sees instead is a person. And so he treats him that way. Mercy. Love and kindness. That's what this passage is about. And that is what this church is about. You should know this, that our church family has flaws, but it is particularly good at this, at reminding people of how valuable they are. We are really, really good at this. If you are about the same God that Elisha knows, then you're about people, and we are. You can see that fact by the way we allocate. It's in our literature. We allocate a minimum of 13% of our annual budget toward outreach ministries like Sarah's Inn, like Housing Forward and those in need all over Chicago and the globe, because we're about people. It's why every summer our high schoolers travel to some new corner of the country like West Virginia and sacrifice their time and energy for the sake of others, because even Fair Oaks teenagers are about people. Every week there are dozens and dozens of children that just flood our halls, gaining in wisdom, encouraged in curiosity, growing in confidence, leading us in worship, feeling at home here, because they know that they can walk in the door and what they're going to be told is, you are a child of God, and I am going to treat you that way. Children feeling at home here, learning to give up their candy for other kids because they learn that it's about people. How much this church cares about others was plainly visible on Friday night when it seemed like every member who could attend Shabbat did, to express support and love for our Jewish friends, because we know it's about people. Like all churches, there's always going to be room for us to learn and improve. And I look forward to seeing where that growth is going to take us, because our future is so stinking bright. But speaking for Haley, we are just ridiculously proud to be your pastors. We brag about it all the time. We are so proud just to be a part of this church. And even though y'all cut our checks, because you remember that we're people too, we will once again enthusiastically give the finances that we can to support Fair Oaks. And we hope that you join us and make a pledge for 2019. Because Fair Oaks is worth it. We do good work here. Really good work. Because this church family is uniquely good at seeing people for who they really are, as children of God. And we're really good at choosing to treat them that way. And may it always be so. Amen.